welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today. My guest for this episode is Abby Donnell, founder and CEO of Bork & Mother, a third-party lactation room service provider that works with office building landlords to open these full-service pumping rooms. The Houston company is expanding with new offices in town, another one coming soon in Austin, and thanks to a new partnership with CBRE, a national expansion. Abby joins the show today to discuss the challenges she's overcome navigating a pandemic, fundraising, and more. Hi, Abby. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, Natalie. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm so glad to connect with you again and to have you on the podcast. It's long overdue. I remember covering early days of Bork & Mother on Innovation Map. I mean, yeah. It was early days for Innovation Map too. So it's so cool to see how the company has grown. So excited to catch up. So for those who are listening who aren't familiar with you, give me the highlight reel of your career leading up to founding your company and then what actually inspired Bork & Mother.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. My background is in advertising and marketing. I was born in Houston, grew up in Houston, and I went off to school in Colorado. I knew I wanted to get into advertising very early on, and I did just that. So I stayed out there working for a bit. And then kind of the way life happened, I sort of accidentally wound up back in Houston working for a small boutique firm here in town. And I had the privilege of getting to work with a lot of different clients. It really reflected the kind of Houston business scene. So a lot of medical, a lot of energy, a lot of nonprofits. So I got to see a lot of different workplaces and business strategies and what have you. And I've always been rather entrepreneurial. I always kind of knew down the line I wanted to have my own business. I just always thought it'd be in advertising or marketing or something like that. This whole thing kind of threw me for a loop, actually, because it came about sort of accidentally. I ended up going to business school at Rice while still working full-time at the marketing firm here. And just the way life worked out, all my friends started having kids around that time. And I started watching everyone struggle with the return to work, primarily around breastfeeding. So, you know, the navigating pumping, navigating places within the workplace to pump, you know, and I was not a mother myself yet. And so when we'd all get together, I would hear all of these stories about how terrible it was and, you know, forgetting parts and having to run to Target in the middle of the workday or trying to, you know, run the office to find a place to pump or being told to use the conference room. And these were workplaces that should have had the resources to provide. I mean, these were, you know, known companies, let's put it that way. And so I just kind of sat back with nothing to add and thought about it. And I was like, that sounds absolutely terrible. And here I'm kind of like looking around my workplace. It's an open office floor plan, you know, only glass walls. My company culture was super family friendly and supportive, but physically there would have been no place for me to pump if I wanted to continue breastfeeding after, you know, returning to work. And so I was like, I just kind of used it as a case study in business school. I brought it to class and we started kind of hashing on it and talked to a lot of employers and realized there were pain points around recruiting and retaining women and trying to satisfy this legal requirement. And the whole thing sort of just grew from there. And so I at one point, it was consuming my thoughts all the time. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to go for it.
Yeah. So what, once you realize that, and of course, you know, having that idea during business school, being able to workshop it within your community, within Rice, how did you turn this into a business model? And, you know, what sort of routes did you consider and what did you end up on?
Yeah. So I actually launched the company with a slightly different business model. I launched it almost like a private club. So I basically approached a real estate investor and asked them if they, you know, would be okay to piloting the concept. And they were good with it. So they gave me some space, and I worked on the build out with them. And then I was in charge of enrolling customers, enrolling these companies in our membership program. And what I quickly found was that that was a very lengthy process, and every company had kind of different requirements and different, you know, needs. And the other piece of it was that moms really, in a lot of cases, weren't that comfortable advocating for themselves for it, because, you know, there's already some sensitivities around maternity leave and coming back and wanting to, you know, present a full return, you know, 100%. And so, at that same point that we were kind of understanding all of this, we were getting inbound requests from landlords about how do we offer this to our tenants? And so then we slightly pivoted. And so now we're actually a lactation suite service provider for commercial office buildings as an amenity. So we created this service for commercial office buildings that the new business model really creates this win-win-win scenario, because it is more cost efficient for all parties. It is a better solution for all parties. It adds privacy, and it's much more streamlined.
Yeah, I think what's so interesting about Working Mothers, you look at the photos and it looks so nice, and you have this like really elegant approach to providing a service that essentially is necessary, is legally you kind of required to buy employers to have. So it's like you really took this bare minimum, we just have to have a room for women who are breastfeeding, and turned it into an actual positive experience, which is just so great for women. So how do you kind of balance that, you know, the requirement side of things, but also providing something that's really comfortable for women to use?
Yeah, well, and that's where the shared space sort of outsourced model works out in everyone's favor, because it allows us to provide a much more elevated solution. And there's another component to the whole thing that I think a lot of people aren't aware of. And that is that, you know, if Brett, there's some, how do I put it? There's some science going on when it comes to breastfeeding, and there are hormones involved that, you know, with milk supply and release when you're trying to pump. And if you are sitting in an IT closet with your back up against the door so that no employees come in, and you're worried about them hearing the pump, you are physically so tense that your body just can't produce milk or in the way that it needs to. And you actually see a lot of women return to work. They're in these subpar situations. Their milk supply starts tanking. So then, you know, there's stress and all of that. And it's sort of a domino effect that affects performance. It affects turnover rates, and it affects their happiness and dedication to their employer. And so it's a lot more than the space itself. You know, we really do spend a lot of time crafting the spaces with that in mind, to make sure that they are safe, sanitary, comfortable, and, you know, also productive. A lot of women can work while they pump. But it's all of our support resources within the suites themselves and through our app that really add to that level of service and make it truly beneficial for working moms. It helps them succeed at everything they are doing, because we know when it comes to working moms, usually they are juggling more things than any single person should have to juggle.
I was going to say, they need all the help they can.
Yes. So. And someone with a 4-month-old and a toddler, I can attest to the juggling act.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You grew this company while you grew your family.
Yeah, I was actually pregnant with my first when we launched the pilot. So I got to go through it all and test it all in real time.
Well, that's some authenticity there in the business for sure. Yeah. So from the pilot, how have you grown across the city now and really expanded to, you know, more buildings?
Yeah, we're really excited about, obviously, you know, we've hit some speed bumps with the pandemic that has slowed down the launch of a few locations. But that's starting to pick back up, construction starting to resume on those locations. So we've got two open currently, another one under construction that will hopefully be open before the end of the year. And we have quite a full pipeline in Houston. And we also have one opening in Austin soon and a pretty exciting pipeline in markets outside of Texas as well.
Even in spite of the challenges with the pandemic, as you've touched on, you know, you have this opportunity to grow nationally with CBRE. So how does that relationship work with CBRE? Tell us all about that.
Great. Yes. So we're super excited about the partnership with CBRE. CBRE is huge. They've got representation across the United States and all the main markets that we are targeting. And it really came about because Abby Alford saw what we were doing, loved what we were doing. She, I think, works with a lot of female-led companies and kind of proposed this partnership. And so we are working with her and Lucian Bukowski, among, you know, other CBRE teams. And yeah, super excited to kind of navigate this national expansion with them by our side.
When you mentioned the COVID effect, I guess I didn't even really think about that. I mean, we're moving into better days, but, you know, how did that affect you? And I know it also probably affected in your fundraising attempts too. So just tell me a little bit about some of the challenge you've had to face, because realistically, this is a real estate play. Yeah. And then I also want to hear more about, you know, what you're targeting from potential locations, obviously office buildings, and now more than just in Houston. But what are you really looking for?
Yeah. Yeah. So with the pandemic, you know, short term, like a lot of people, it was pretty brutal. Everything kind of within the office sector really, really ground to a halt. And, you know, in fact, we had one location mid pandemic that opened to an empty building. So that, you know, it was pretty tough from a short term standpoint. From a long-term standpoint, it actually, in many ways, strengthens our value prop for a number of reasons. One, you know, there's now a focus on health, wellness, sanitation within the workplace itself. And so shining a light on some of these subpar pumping conditions that moms are having to endure, multi-purpose wellness rooms, you know, you don't want to be making, you know, preparing food for a newborn in a germy environment. You don't want to be carrying pump parts across an office to a community break room where that, you know, the community break room sink is generally the most germy part of the office. And so having this outsourced dedicated space for this, where you've got, you know, all the proper cleaning and sanitizing solutions and regimens in place, that's highly important. The other thing is that I think there was a light that was shown on all of the, or not on all of, on the lack of resources in place to support moms in the workplace. And so now, you know, trying to recruit back a lot of working moms who had to leave or, you know, who dropped out of the workplace with true benefits that offer support is been a big factor for us. And then lastly, this future, you know, this flex and remote work, a lot of people at first think that might be, you know, not a good thing for us, when in fact, it actually makes this shared space solution even more valuable to employers, because legally they have to provide something. But if a mom is only coming in once or twice a week, or, you know, for this small chunk of time, then it makes even less sense to build out, maintain, you know, their own in-office solution, pay rent on that solution, when they could just use the facility in the building, our facility in the building.
Absolutely. I think there's probably, as you mentioned, you know, so many women left the workplace during this time for so many different reasons. It was just harder on mothers to educate their children at home, like be a part, sure everything's okay with that. But, you know, hopefully that's changing and more women are coming back into the workplace to kind of make up for that. And having this benefit, this opportunity is a great benefit to employers. So when you're working with, you know, new clients, I guess I would say, where they are the real estate person, but also you also have this connection to the companies that reside in the buildings as well. So how do you navigate those relationships?
So our main relationship is with the landlord. And that's often how we're being brought into new opportunities. And then we are offering a lot of support resources to employers as well. So lactation accommodation policies, we have a mother friendly workplace seal for, you know, the companies in our buildings. We are introducing more and more employee support benefits, kind of organically starting with this newborn phase, but eventually growing beyond it. And so we form a very natural relationship with a lot of the employers by nature of being in the building itself.
So one thing I really wanted to ask you about today, because I know Working Mother is everywhere in my coverage because you are taking great advantage of accelerators, pitch competitions. You're very connected with the Rice Network as well. So I want to ask you about some of the experience you've had and the opportunities you've had. Which one of these programs or opportunities were really difference makers for growing Working Mother?
So a lot of them have been, I mean, trying to single some out is tough, but I would say there's been kind of maybe three things that really stand out. The very first thing that I did after graduating from business school was go through the Monarch Incubator, which I don't think is existing anymore, but it was a virtual accelerator. And that helped me kind of kickstart things and introduced me to a pretty wide network of people. And Diana, who's now with the Artemis Fund, was one of the founders who ran that incubator, and she and I formed a really great relationship, and she introduced me to a lot of people who are now my mentors or advisors. And so that was a pretty key program for me. The other major, I think, I don't know if it's so much a program, but the Rice Business Network has been huge for me. A lot of the professors, a lot of the my fellow students, you know, everyone has been incredible and supportive and, you know, just happy to help whenever they can, which has been huge. And I'm very thankful for that community. I sit on a Rice actually has a entrepreneurship roundtable program where you can participate with another group of founders in kind of similar industries or stages as you. And we meet once a month. It's a little bit like therapy for solo founders or for, you know, entrepreneurs. And that has been huge. Very, very helpful to have that network. And the third one is the Hello Alice community. Now we used to do Houston walks, networking walks, which were like my favorite, cause you got to get out, get some exercise and network at the same time. And I loved those, and made a lot of great people while doing them. Unfortunately, we paused them quite a bit during the pandemic. So I'm hoping they pick them back up soon.
To follow up on that, you know, there's so many options, especially now in Houston, of new accelerators. And, in light of the pandemic, there's even more options with virtual accelerators. For you, how do you, you know, what do you look at when you're evaluating if something is worth your time? Because there are so many options and like you want to do them all, and it almost looks like you do from my perspective, but like, how do you decide, you know, what to do, what event to attend, what accelerator incubator to get involved with?
Yeah. That's a really tough question. I have had to get far more disciplined on saying no to things, just because you just don't have the time or the bandwidth to take everything on that you want to take on. And especially now that I have two little ones, I have to be even more kind of disciplined on what I can participate in. And so, you know, when it comes to things like incubators or accelerators, my advice is to kind of do your homework. I actually called a couple people who had been through the Monarch Incubator, and most of the reviews were just glowing. And then I talked to one person who had very, her feedback was almost kind of just lukewarm. And then I was like, but was it worth it? And she was like, absolutely. And I was like, well, if you could talk like in a way that wasn't like, you know, like that excited about it, but like it, you felt it was like absolutely worth your time, then sign me up. Like that was the one for me that did it. And I was so glad I did. But I think, you know, in the end, you just have to kind of do your homework, talk to a lot of people, and be very selective. But then once you're participating, you give it your all and truly listen. You know, I think listening is kind of one of the biggest things you can take away from any event or incubator or group, is listening to the experience of others and asking a lot of really dumb, basic questions. And so that's kind of my strategy when it comes to those things.
I think that's great advice, and probably super is very relevant to entrepreneurs who are listening. So speaking of doing your homework, I know a big assignment for you has been investing and getting investment. And it's a particularly challenging time of the past 18 months to do that. So what are some of the challenges that you've had to overcome with fundraising, and what's that process been like for you?
I got to fundraise during the pandemic, which was interesting. The virtual, at first I loved it. I was also pregnant at the time, so it was great and convenient for me, because A, I didn't have to, you know, travel so much, and B, most people didn't even know I was pregnant, which I've heard so many, you know, stories about how it can impact people's decisions and divert a lot of questions to things that aren't as important. Let me put it that way. So at first I thought it was great. It did get harder and harder just because you're trying to pitch and cameras will start turning off, or people will, you know, turn around or walk away, and trying to keep your energy up and keep people engaged can get hard when you're doing virtual pitch after virtual pitch. But so it was there are pros and cons of it. I would say for me personally, one of the hardest things is we're in this, we're in this strange niche of our industry where we don't really fall completely into a real estate bucket, and we don't really fall completely into a tech bucket. So we're kind of creating this interesting market, and that provides a whole lot of opportunity. It provides a ton of upside, but it makes finding the right investors who understand what we're doing a little bit trickier. So that's been, I'd say, the biggest obstacle for us.
I also wonder, you know, when you're in your experience of pitching to investors, just from the landscape, I assume you're pitching to a lot of men who might not understand it. So you're almost like educating them. And then, but at the same time, you have to make your case, kind of thing. Is that what the experience is like?
Yes. And I will say, I don't want to, you know, to the credit of many male investors, a lot of people get it or try to get it or, you know, make the explanation easy. There are a number who immediately are like, oh, I don't know anything about this industry, I'm going to bow out. And that is frustrating, because at the end of the day, we can boil it down to numbers. We can boil it down to the business case, you know, and that really doesn't matter what the nuances of breastfeeding are. So yeah, it was a little tricky. It's been kind of an entertaining ride, learning to talk about breastfeeding to mostly men. But like I said, especially with a wave of younger investors, a lot of them, their wives are going through it. They're seeing it with coworkers. So there's been a lot of enthusiasm on either side, but it's definitely been a factor.
Yeah, I wonder, I mean, even if work and mother isn't so appropriately bucketed into femtech, it does have the same challenges that femtech companies have, which is bridging the conversation about a female focused solution, you know, which I think is so interesting that we're seeing more and more of this in so many news outlets covering the wave of femtech. And it's because there are more female entrepreneurs, more female investors, more women in the space having the conversations now. And I just wonder your perspective on how you've seen that evolve over Working Mother's trajectory, but also, you know, why you think it is, why now for this conversation and this opportunity it presents itself.
Yeah, the timing, I think the timing has been incredibly spot on for us and to, you know, to see this kind of evolution at play, because for so long, for so many things, this included, you have women who have sort of suffered in silence. No one wanted to talk about it. Men didn't want to tackle it, or they didn't think it was a big enough problem to tackle it. I think a lot of female or femtech companies, the first kind of reaction from a lot of people who don't know much about whatever it is they're solving, immediately are kind of like, well, how big of a problem can this be? I haven't heard much about it. And it's like, well, it's actually pretty big. You know, it's actually much bigger than you think. And so I think for us in particular, it was something that people suffered in silence for so long. You know, just in fact, when I started, you know, we had a customer who had been pumping in her car in secret every day, and her employer found out, was mortified. We got her in like the next day, super happy to, you know, be able to offer a much better solution. But it's just that, it's that very thing of like, no one realized it. And so the problem is actually much bigger than people think. And unfortunately, what happens is that it usually manifests in turnover or, you know, boils up to a lawsuit. And so it's, you know, the timing piece, to where now it is something that is, it's no longer taboo to talk about. It is not, you know, so many more people are aware of the problem. They're aware of the legal piece. And so that openness of being able to talk about it, is very, very refreshing.
For you, and having gone through it and are still going through it with, you know, pitching a company that falls in this taboo or like historically taboo subject, what advice do you have for fellow female founders or founders in general of a company that approaches a subject like this? You know, what advice has been given to you that you felt really great comfort in, and what you would tell others?
Yeah, I think, I don't know necessarily if this is advice, but it's been my approach. And that is that it really boils down to the nuances of the way you talk about things. So when it comes to pumping, for example, so many moms feel like it's on them to find it. And it's because they've been, I mean, rightfully so, they've been made to try and figure it out. In fact, I had one employer that I was talking to about it go, well, I don't know what the women in my company have been doing, but they've certainly been figuring it out for, you know, this far. And I'm kind of like, I don't know that I wonder what your company culture is like, if that's kind of your attitude and how many women work there. But, you know, when I am visiting an office or when I am at a conference or convention and I need to find a mother's room, I don't go out and, you know, say like, is there a place I can pump? Or is it, you know, I literally say, where is your mother's room? Can you please direct me to it? And if they don't have it, that's on them, because legally employers have to have it. So instead of women feeling like put upon for trying to figure it out or, you know, try to come up with a solution themselves, they shouldn't be feeling shame for it. It's the employer who doesn't have one that needs to be feeling a little bit shamed and like, oh, let me find it. You know what I mean? And it's hard because no one wants to be put in a position of vulnerability. But I think little nuances to language and how you talk about it, and acknowledging that it's not a personal problem. It is a broader problem that everyone faces, and that there's, in our case, legislation around it too, on who's responsible for providing the space. And so that's just been my approach of kind of how to get over some of those feelings.
And that's funny when you described that scenario of like asking for where the mother's room is. You know, if you went up to them and asked, hey, where's the bathroom? And they were like, you know, that would, and that's like, that's something you
exactly
need when you need it. And it's like, if they were hesitant to respond or like, we don't have one, that would never happen. You know, no one would be okay with that.
Right. Well, and when you think about too, you know, one thing that we've been talking about a lot, that as we are talking in this real estate industry, is, if you look at ADA compliance, every building, you know, makes accommodations so that everyone can be included in the spaces. And it's the same kind of thing. It's just that this hadn't been considered before. And it's the exact same kind of thing. You know, you wouldn't have buildings without restrooms. You wouldn't have buildings without ramps. Why should you have a building without a clean, safe place for mom to go pump? Because they are part of the users of that building every single day.
I mean, companies are having fitness centers and nap rooms and yoga rooms, meditation rooms before they're having.
Oh my gosh. Believe me. I know. I've been doing a lot of building tours and hearing about the latest amenities, and you've got golf simulators and beers on tap, and yet you still have moms, you know, crouched in a IT closet somewhere. That one's pretty tough.
Yeah. That's hard to see, but I so appreciate what Work and Mother does to fill that gap. And also what a great business opportunity to both educate these landlords and companies that can provide so much better for their new mom employees. So thanks again for joining and sharing your story and everything exciting that's happening at Work and Mother.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate all the support, and obviously I love that we've been, I guess, chatting on and off throughout the growth. So it's been fun seeing Innovation Maps growth at the same time.
I know. I remember seeing like early days Work and Mother pitches, and you've never fallen off the Houston innovation radar. So congrats on that, and for continuing on so strongly. So appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.